Recorded live in downtown Newtown, this is Rancho Notorious, a podcast about movies and other cool stuff. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious. Hey now! Welcome everybody to Season 2, Episode 6 of Rancho Notorious, and to Darren Bevan, who's no doubt listening wherever he may be. Yes, that last bit was an actual tribute to Hank Kingsley, of course, the great sidekick of television history, basically. So yes, I did know what you were talking about, just want to let him know about that. Right, now we can get on with the show. My name is Dan Slevin, and here with me in Wellington at Rancho Notorious, Kaylee Carruthers. G'day,
Kaylee. Hello.
And also with us here at the Homestead, exec producer of the show, very happy to see you, Claire Carré.
Hello.
Have I pronounced that correctly?
You have. Thank you very much.
Wow, that's a good start. It's downhill from now on, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously you've come to Wellington just to be on the show, but no doubt there were some other reasons for coming as well?
Well, I came to pick up my badge, because I've been patiently waiting for a little while for that, not to give you a hard time.
Sorry, I forgot to bring it.
Yeah, well, we've got a few badges, and you're also entitled to a postcard. As an executive producer of the show, we are very, very familiar with what our responsibilities are to our funders. Postcards from exotic climes, T-shirts, badges, and for executive producers, a chance to come here, be on the show, and have dinner with us afterwards. Look, here's a badge being delivered for you.
Look at that. Thank you so much.
And to all of our other executive producers and all of our other pledges who are listening and are waiting patiently, drumming their fingers on the table as they listen to the show, we have got as far as a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So we know what we're supposed to do for you. We're just a little bit behind on that. But, you know, the Christmas holidays
are coming, and I'm really going to dedicate myself to sending out those postcards, and I apologize for the delay.
But, you know, we are getting there. And if you turn up and knock on the door of Rancho Notorious on a Wednesday or a Thursday night, depending on which night we're recording, and you are an executive producer, then you will be made welcome. That pledge will be honoured. So
It's true.
So welcome.
Thank you.
No, in all seriousness, Wellington's not necessarily somewhere that you just stumble across on your travels. Where do you come from? Where do you live?
So I'm from Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
And I work at Capilano University with one of your friends or guests that's been on the show, David Geary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, how nice. How is David?
He's lovely, as always. Yep. Yep. And actually, I have a New Zealand connection because my father was a New Zealander, and I first came to Wellington about 4 years ago, and I've always wanted to come back, and so decided to have a wee holiday and check in on the podcast as well.
So how did you hear about us? Because, you know, our fame and fortune, you know, is spread far and wide, obviously, but not everybody's story is the same.
Right. I was trying to remember how I first came across the podcast, and I'm sorry, I don't honestly remember, but I've been listening to you and been a fan for a long time. And also in my studies and teaching with my students, we talk a lot about crowdfunding. And so when I saw you had a campaign for Rancho Notorious, I decided to put my money where my mouth is and get behind the podcast as a fan.
And no doubt you tried to persuade all of your students to support us as well.
Absolutely, I have. And there's a few that will be listening to this, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Terrific.
So we'll get them a few at a time. We'll increase your listener base.
Brilliant. Were you a listener to the previous incarnation of the show, or did you discover us when we were launching Rancho Notorious?
I listened to the previous incarnation, right. And then you disappeared, and I missed you, and then was so happy to find you again. And
this is a common story, as we're about to as we're about to find out, because Kaylee, you're going to be able to. I suppose we should talk about what introduce the show properly. What are we going to have on the show today? Well, a follow up to last week's review. If you were listening to last week's show when we launched the show, saying, "Yay, we're going to have an interview with the director of Advanced Style," the plan originally was that Lena would Skype into us while we were recording the show. So genuinely, we thought that that was what was going to be the content of the show. As it turns out, there was a bit of confusion over time zones. She was in Lithuania, total understanding about why New Zealand time zones would be a mystery to her. And so that didn't happen. And rather than go back and re-record the whole show in order to be like accurate, we thought we would be accurate in a kind of different kind of way. So,
in a jovial way.
Yeah. So what we did was we ended up reviewing Advanced Style last week. And this week I managed to get an interview with Seth Cohen, who is the producer, creator of the Advanced Style blog, which is what the film is all about, and he's in New York City, just back from Amsterdam. So I got to talk to him, and we'll be playing that interview. So we're still doing that full comprehensive Advanced Style coverage that we promised you, just in a slightly different order. anyway, so that we've got that coming up. We're going to talk to Ari Seth Cohen about his blog, the book that came out of it, the film, and life in New York as well. Also on today's show, we're going to review James Gandolfini's. This was another thing that we promised you last week, and then we just didn't do. I started and you went. Yeah, I started doing it and you said, no time. I think your tummy was rumbling and it was dinner time, and that's probably more than likely what it was. Anyway, James Gandolfini's final screen appearance in The Drop. We're going to talk about Hilary Swank losing the use of her body while the audience loses the will to live in You're Not You, plus the British family comedy What We Did on Our Holiday. And, you know, all of that, plus the usual rubbish that we come up with on the show. But first up, Kaylee, the mailbag, which has been bulging,
yes,
has it not?
Yes. Let's start with a really lovely tweet from Deborah Jones NZ. She tweeted us to say, OMG, I've been waiting for Cinematica to come back, and now here you are. What have I missed?
Well, where to start?
Season one.
Yeah, basically all of season one. And I saw that that tweet from her, and I was going to say you've missed 26 episodes of season one. And then I remembered that season one wasn't 26 episodes on this show, and I couldn't remember how many there were. I couldn't remember how many we've done of these. I had to go and count them. Hopeless.
Anyway.
Yeah. Welcome.
Anyway, so Dan, you kindly filled her in on everything she's missed, and she said, okay, dries tears forward to iTunes.
She must have been a fan of the third presenter.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe that was it. Maybe that was the hence the drying of tears.
Maybe. Mm. Or maybe, I think there's the drying of the tears because she missed out on the crowdfunding.
We can always restart it for her if she wants.
Anyway, well, welcome Deborah, if you're listening.
Well, we've got all of Claire's students to add, so
yeah,
we should just run.
Right.
This is a
great week for
new
us.
Campaign.
Yeah, well, season three or Christmas campaign, sure.
Yeah, Christmas party.
Help us pay for the t-shirts that we promised all the people and that gave last time.
Oh, okay. Anyway, welcome, Deborah. Thank you so much for that lovely tweet. Fred Thompson has been very busy this week. We got three tweet reviews, but to keep with tradition, I'll just read two. Two words for What We Did on Our Holiday. Family fun. Struggles for that cinematic feel, but couldn't help but enjoy it, especially those kids.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Come to that later on.
And one that we haven't seen yet, or I haven't seen yet, a two-word review for Paddington. Utterly charming, hilarious one-liners, quirky characters, inventive and visual gags. So much fun.
Wow. Okay. I think Fred lives in Auckland, and I think that there were sneak previews for Paddington up in Auckland. I'm pretty sure he doesn't go to media screenings or reviewer screenings. So, yeah, I'm guessing that was – because I know there were reviewer screenings in Auckland of that. We live in Wellington. For those of you that are from outside – New Zealand, many, many, many of you listening. Wellington is the small but perfectly formed capital city of of New Zealand.
So
but
true.
But we don't get necessarily all of the the fun stuff that our posh Auckland friends get. So we often have to wait to watch films with like audiences as opposed to, you know, other reviewers.
Hmm. So, but hey, yeah. Parking buildings are opening up again, so we have that to look forward
well,
to.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I was talking to somebody this morning actually about how, you know, when I moved to Wellington 20 odd years ago, everybody was saying, oh, we're the world leader in earthquake prevention technology. All of our buildings are on little rubber feet, you know, so that they wobble in the wind. And it's not made a blind bit of difference because they've all got to be retrofitted and the millions of dollars spent on almost every tall building. The Majestic Centre, there is a movie connection to this story because the Majestic Centre on Willis Street is on the site of an old theatre called the Majestic, hence the name. And that's Wellington's tallest building and only 20 years old, and yet $80 million being spent on it over 18 months, 2 years, in order to bring it up to earthquake standard. It's a quite terrifying amount of money.
That building's so ugly.
It's postmodern.
Ugh. Yeah. It looks so 90s.
It's a product, very early 90s as well. It's definitely a product of its time.
Ugh. Anyway, and in this week's Twitter feed, the award for best renaming of the final Hobbit film goes to Reese Pie in her tweet saying, and she said, "Think Dan Slevin snuck in his two-word review for Hobbit. Are we nearly there yet? Just then, # Giant Eagles."
Giant Eagles, definitely, definitely. And you're right, Are We There Yet should have been the name of the film.
Are we nearly there yet?
Are we nearly there yet? I got into quite a long debate yesterday with various New Zealand film people because I complained, and I think with some justification, that there's so much cynicism in the New Zealand film reviewing community for those Hobbit films. And I can understand where that cynicism comes from, but it means that in many, many cases, people are reviewing what they think the film is going to be before they've even seen it. And, you know, the social media is terrible for this. I mean, it's terrible for lots and lots of things, but it is also terrible for just letting those sort of stray thoughts out when they're really better off in, I think, you know, in lots of ways. Anyway, I'm guessing, because we did sort of promise last week that we would do the new Hobbit film, but you haven't had a chance to see it yet. This is a Wednesday night in New Zealand, and midnight screenings are the first public ones tonight. Mm. So next week we will dissect the Battle of the Five Armies.
Mm. And in comments on the website, from my mom, "Bravo, another great show, Kaylee and Dan. Thanks so much for clarifying that Canada is included in the North American box office numbers. We're disappointed, but we'll manage here in the great white north. P.S. I think the grape juice is a lovely pre-show addition." So there you go. My mum is encouraging us to imbibe.
Cheers. Cheers, Kaylee's mom.
Cheers. It was so cute, because after she posted that, she texted me to say she posted that.
Just in case. Well, she knows you're busy. You're very busy. You've got a new job. And why would you be just, like, randomly going over to the website to see if somebody's left a comment, you know?
Yeah. Funerals and Stinks / Ratchet Notorious.
Yeah. Good. So are your folks going to come to visit you here in New Zealand at some point?
I think their plan is to come next Christmas. So this time next year, Rancho Christmas special.
A very Rancho Christmas.
Murray and Brenda.
Next year.
At the table.
Oh my goodness, can't wait. Yes, looking forward to that. Okay, so it's that lull in terms of cinema going, which is the week before The Hobbit comes out.
When the water gets sucked out before the tsunami.
Exactly. Nothing's opening except for The Hobbit for probably the next 2 weeks. I don't know what we're going to talk about apart from The Hobbit next week. But anyway, what have people been going to, or have they been saving their pennies?
Well, in number 5, crawling down the list, down from 4, is Nightcrawler. Opening at number 4, What We Did on Our Holiday. Opening at 3, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, which just barely fits in that box.
It does. They've made the font really, really small really in order to fit it in.
Speaking of fonts, why is this in Comic Sans?
Don't ask me. Ask the Motion Picture Distributors Association of New Zealand Incorporated.
Sitting at number 2 is Interstellar, and still in the number 1 spot after 3 weeks, Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1.
Yeah, so it has to be said, a fairly average week in the New Zealand box office. Alexander and the Terrible, etc., etc., would normally be a school holiday release, but I think that there was a fear that it would just get smashed by The Hobbit, so they've snuck it out early. Looking a little bit further down, Fury still, some people still went to see Fury. The Deadlands at number 10, so still at the top 10, and at some point very soon there'll be an announcement of the MOA Awards, the New Zealand Film Awards, of which it's got many nominations. Straight in at number 13, something called Action Jackson. And now I seem to recall there's already been a film called Action Jackson. This appears to be the Bollywood version, I would imagine. It's called, because the distributor is somebody called Saggy Motion Pictures. And what else? Isn't this amazing? People are still going to see The Maze Runner after all this time. And, oh, look, what's this at number 17? Women Who Flirt. Anybody got any ideas what that is?
No idea.
We need Fred Thompson, don't we, to tell us, because he knows everything.
It's from China Lion Entertainment.
So maybe it's a Hong Kong movie?
Maybe.
Okay, well, we could look it up, but we won't. Now, I'm doing Australia, aren't I?
Yes.
So here we go. I haven't even had a chance to have a look at this. Top 5 in Australia. Oh, my God. Number 5 is exactly the same as New Zealand. Nightcrawler. Interstellar down at 4. Alexander and the etc., etc. is at 3. We haven't had it released here yet, but Exodus, Gods and Kings, which is a sword and sandal epic, biblical epic, Christian Bale, and directed by Ridley Scott. So,
Might be okay.
This is another sort of long involved social media discussion about whether Christian Bale as a Welshman is entitled to play an Egyptian in this current
entitled
to play an Egyptian in this current environment. You know, it's like is it still cool to have people of no color, of which the Welsh evidently are, playing people of color? Anyway. I haven't seen the film. Don't know whether he's any good at it or not. But you know, it's not the 1950s. It's not the 1940s. And maybe they could have gone and found a whole lot of real Egyptians to play these parts. But as Ridley Scott pointed out, no one would pay to go and see it. So anyway, that's Exodus, Gods and Kings, and of course, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1 still caning it basically at the Australian box office. I'm just looking a little bit further down here at some films that don't look like they're going to get releases here in New Zealand. Does anybody know what The Green Prince is?
No.
Okay, that's a number 18. The Action Jackson's in there again. And what is Fat Pizza versus Housos?
I don't know.
I really should be paying more attention to this because, I've seen people tweeting about how much they enjoy this. But anyway, Fat Pizza versus Housos, if you're listening at home...
What do you mean?
It could be in another language entirely, but leave us a comment on the website. You get more characters there to play with than if you're tweeting us. Tell us, first of all, what it's about, and then whether we should be paying any attention to it.
In the North American box office, in at number 5, Interstellar, 4, Big Hero 6, 3, Horrible Bosses 2, 2, Penguins of Madagascar, and of course in the number 1 position after 3 weeks, Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1. And in the top 10 of things I'd really like to know what's going on, what is the pyramid? Tell me, what is the pyramid?
What is the pyramid? Exactly. 20,
it opened in the 9th position.
Look, I'm going to look it up. Listen.
No, this is fun. We ask our listeners.
Well.
But we're too curious now. Is it like Ouija? Is it the sequel to Ouija that came out immediately? Because Ouija's not even in the top 10 anymore. It's just gone.
Ashley Hinshaw, James Buckley. It's a horror film. Of course it is. Mm. So it is very much in the Ouija
family.
Family, yeah. Starring Dennis O'Hare is the only name that I that I know. Nope. Don't recognize any of those names. A team of U.S. archaeologists unearths an ancient pyramid buried deep beneath the Egyptian desert. As they search the pyramid's depths, they become hopelessly lost in its dark and endless catacombs. Searching for a way out, they become desperate to seek daylight again. They come to realize they aren't just trapped. They are being hunted.
So it's just like that one section in... Oh, what's that film? Oh, it's just in my head. Oh, the Aliens prequel. You know, they get trapped.
Right.
They can't get out, even though they have this great technology.
Yeah, and they're just the stupid, I imagine.
Yeah. And in the IMDb Movie Meter for North America, the number one searched film this week, no surprises, is Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yeah, which is going to be followed. Did I do this joke last week? This is going to be followed by Star Wars The Force Rolls Over and Hits the Snooze Button.
Oh.
Anyway, right. Time to talk about actual films that are actually playing in actual cinemas in New Zealand. So, time to go to Brooklyn.
All your money in the bag.
Do you know what you're doing? Do you know whose money you're jacking?
Fill the van!
You don't see anything?
Nah. You know, that's this neighborhood, right?
I heard that Cousin Marv doesn't know the bar. Some hard guys.
You're not a hard guy.
Yeah, we had a crew back in the day when we was young. Marv, he thought he was a tough guy. Then the neighborhood changed. It wasn't enough to be tough no more. You know, you had to be mean.
You know this guy?
Oh.
Find my money.
Tom Hardy, James Gandolfini, Noomi, you did this
Rapace.
For me, like Rapace. It feels like it should be Rapace.
It might be.
Oh, come on. I think you were so confident with that.
It's the anglicized version that I'm confident with.
All right. Matthias Schoenaerts are the four lead actors in The Drop, which is a pretty damn good film. Anybody, hands up anybody in the room who's seen it, or am I going to be doing this one by myself? Okay, so we'll just do a quickie. Okay, so what we have here is a film that's been based on a short story by the great American writer Dennis Lehane, who wrote Mystic River and films that you'll know. He's also adapted his own story, the screenplay for this. It's set in Brooklyn, in New York, in roughly the present day. And Tom Hardy plays a naive and innocent young bartender at a local corner bar of the kind that we're very familiar with from movies, and it's a working class area, working class part of New York with regulars, but it also has a bit of a secret. Like many similar institutions, it is one of those places that the mob will use to collect gambling and drug money, and so that various. People will, you know, they'll come, they'll drop off their money, and then at the end of the night, the mob will turn up and empty the safe, right? So it's like they rotate around a whole lot of different venues in Brooklyn or in the city, so that nobody knows where all the money's going to be, so that they reduce the risk of being bumped off. Anyway, it turns out that this bar once was owned by James Gandolfini's character, but he got into trouble and had to sell it to the Chechenian mob, and hence why he's...
That's very specific. Chechenian mob.
Yeah, it is. Well, they are very proud of their Chechenian-ness, and there's also... It's not... I wouldn't say it's a plot point, but it's definitely a colour aspect to the film. And the bar gets robbed... And you think, they didn't get away with anything very much. It turns out that there's a great deal of plotting going on amongst various characters. And poor old Bob, played by Tom Hardy, seems to be caught in the middle. At the same time, he's discovered a poor puppy that's been abandoned.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
He adopts a puppy.
And... the woman who in whose garbage can he found the puppy is Noomi Rapace, and it turns out that her ex-boyfriend, played by Matthias Schoenaerts from the Killer Whale movie, the Marion Cotillard killer whale movie.
Yeah, Katy Perry one.
Rust and Bone. We are on fire tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, he plays her ex-boyfriend, who is a psycho, and it turns out that he was the one that was responsible for abandoning the dog, abusing and abandoning the dog. He returns to their lives, making a nuisance of himself, and it all ends up in a really interesting and mostly surprising conclusion on Super Bowl Sunday. And so a lot of plot. Sorry about that. Most people I know will be tuning out at this point, or if they're listening in
all
their
that
car.
All that matters is Tom Hardy and puppies.
That's what I was going to say.
I stopped listening after that, really. It's like, what?
Yeah. Well, he's a bit of a puppy himself, actually, in this film, Tom Hardy. He's a very sweet-natured, naive, kind of innocent guy, and you just fall for the guy because you feel like, oh my god, there's so many nasties out there, he must be completely out of his depth. And it's the development of his character and that makes it all happen. And it's based on a short story, and like a classic short story, it doesn't need more than one twist, it's just got the one, and it's a very satisfying one as well. This is, I think, one of the best films I've seen this year. I haven't seen as many this year as I have in the past, so I wouldn't want to go making bold claims for it as one of the top 10 of the year or whatever, but in terms of what I've seen, pretty happy with it. And a very sad way to say goodbye to James Gandolfini, who it has to say, you know, his character looks very unhealthy, and he certainly looks very unhealthy playing him, but, you know, a great loss, obviously. And was reminded... I read a story recently just reminding us that, you know, Robin Williams' last performance is coming up at Christmas New Year, the last night at the museum film. Probably not the way that he would necessarily want to be remembered. But it's been a tough old year for saying goodbye to great talent. And so that's an important sort of factor in it all. And Tom Hardy is just incredible. I mean, we've seen Locke, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Which was in the festival and got I got a cinema release here, where he just completely commands the screen from behind the wheel of a car for 80 minutes, and in this he is just fantastic, incredible command of a kind of Polish Brooklyn accent, which is tremendous. I mean, really amazing technical feats. But I want to also mention Matthias Schoenaerts, who also has a fantastic American accent, which for somebody, I'm going to look him up. I don't know whether he's Austrian or... Look, here we go. I'm going to cheat again. I don't know whether he's French, whether he's... No, he's Belgian. Wouldn't have picked that. He's from Antwerp. Anyway, he just a fantastic performance by him. And yeah, look, it's a really good film. And it's... And it'll be an easy film for it to just sort of disappear under the radar, but I do commend people to it. So, you know, if you turn up at your local art house cinema and you find that what we did on our holidays is full, just check out and see whether the drop is also playing.
Or maybe go do it instead.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah, do you have two words?
Two words for the drop. I would say sad end.
Says here your most recent place of employment was Red Lobster.
Kind of padded that one.
Have you ever cared for someone suffering from a major degenerative illness?
Not really.
Okay, well, it was young
lady. What did you mean by not really? A retirement home?
This isn't a life he built. I'm the one who got sick, not him.
That's it. Honey, unless those sippy cups are laced with tequila, we're out of here.
Kaylee.
Yep.
You're not you.
Mm.
Anymore. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what, like, this is the worst title of any film of the year, let alone...
That makes sense.
Oh, it doesn't. It's a terrible title.
It's over the top.
Yeah.
But it's also the name of the novel that this is based on.
Of course it's a novel. Yes, I didn't know that, but of course it makes perfect sense now. Mm. So you're going to tell us what You're Not You is about, and then we're going to let people know... how we feel about it. Exactly.
How we feel about it. How it made us feel. Well, Hilary Swank, who really, she can't do much wrong. She's great. Did I mention I saw her at Telluride? She's so beautiful. Oh my gosh.
But she wasn't a Telluride for this, though, was she?
No, she was not. No, she was not. She plays Kate, who is a classical pianist who is diagnosed with ALS. Her husband is played by Josh Duhamel, and they are trying to find someone to take care of her. Mm-hmm. They come across Emmy Rossum's character, Beck, who is, of course, wild child, loves drinking, is a wannabe musician.
Absolutely no training.
No training.
Or aptitude for this whatsoever.
No. And her and Beck and Kate really form a bond. It's a difficult bond, you know, because Kate really takes her under her wing, even though she's the one who actually needs assistance from Beck. Sort of teaches her how to cook, teaches her how to, you know, live her life and dress well and take care of herself. All while Kate is basically disappearing under the terrible effects of ALS.
And ALS is what some of us of a certain age know as Lou Gehrig's disease.
Yes, right? which is actually mentioned in the film.
Right, it's a debilitating, terrible, wasting nervous system.
Which takes over the body very quickly. So you already know when you go in that this movie will have a limited amount of time for when these characters... Well, Hilary Swank will be alive. So that's sort of the very quick summary of it. Let's talk a little bit more about our experience of watching it.
Now, Hilary Swank, as we know, is a very gifted technical actor, but she... I just don't know who's advising her about the quality of the work that she's done.
She produced this film,
right?
And she really wanted to work on it. She wanted to make this film work and happen. So I don't know if she read the book or
maybe
she was given the script and she's like, "This could be great."
It is a great. It's a great vehicle.
It's a good performance.
And she's perfectly fine. You apart from the fact that you're very conscious all the time of knowing that it's Hilary Swank, the symptoms are all perfectly believable, the way that the breathing deteriorates and the voice deteriorates and all that sort of stuff. But it's such a misguided story, and the characters...
It's like Nicholas Sparks writing about someone with ALS.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a bit cheesy, it's a bit predictable, and it's... I mean, there's always that issue of actors who are able-bodied playing characters with some sort of, different ability or illness. And Hilary Swank does a great performance, and
it's intended to be Oscar bait, isn't it? And yet, nothing about it really rings true, because nothing. Everybody in this film appears to be incredibly shallow. It's all, there's so much of this film is about who is bonking who and who's lying about it. And it's, this is a film that, if you would think that two young women in a room talking, getting to know each other might have a chance of, passing the Bechdel test. But this one doesn't, does it? I mean, they're just talking about boys.
Pretty much.
All the time. You're obsessed. And yet, Hilary Swank's character is a concert pianist, but she doesn't appear to have any sort of feeling for art or anything. It's still all about her, her husband's cheating and how that makes her feel. It's just like, really, can we elevate this conversation just a little bit, please? Oh, the shallowness of these people just drove me round the twist when there was a chance. And maybe that's the message of the film, that shallow people get ALS too.
Maybe. But also it's like Josh Duhamel, he's not even... Why is he in this? He's not good.
No. Inexpensive. It's probably, Hilary Swank's the producer. I would imagine, there's not much money spent, in the rest of this film. I can't believe that this was even released here in New Zealand, what audience is there for this that couldn't wait for it to just dribble out on home video at some point, I sat in an empty movie theater last night watching this film, and I've never, it's very, very rare that you sit in a completely empty movie theater. Often when that happens, it's a weekday afternoon or a weekday morning, like a 10:55 session somewhere. And you know that those are hard for people to get to. But evening sessions that are completely empty, not only that, but evening sessions on cheap Tuesdays, they couldn't even tempt people in at like $11 a ticket. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
My husband trailered it all. Like, I haven't seen anything about this film.
Wow, so. It's a desolate experience all around. Seriously, and Emmy Rossum, I have what would I have seen her in? Because she did look vaguely familiar to me. I thought you would have that information at your finger, or you do have it sort of at your fingertips. Mm. I was thinking metaphorically, but anyway. Phantom of the Opera. There we go. As we promised a little bit earlier on, we get tips from.
She was in Mystic River.
Mr. What?
Mystic River.
Oh, Mystic River.
Yeah, which you just mentioned.
Right. Phantom of the Opera was just yelled through several walls from the other room to us.
She was in Beautiful Creatures.
Was she? Oh, was she the grown-up sister in that? Or the... Anyway. Anyway, again, also, obviously some talent on display, but at the service of something really, really weak.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so, Kaylee, I'm going to ask you, is there any redeeming feature of this apart from watching Swank give an acting lesson?
No, not really. It doesn't pull it off in an authentic way. It feels like a really cheap Nicholas Sparks film written by the lady who made Twilight.
Ooh.
Who did Twilight? Like, it's just, it's like, and I'm sure, like, maybe the book is great. Maybe it's this really affecting tale that,
maybe there's this huge amount of internal stuff going on that only a book can really do. And then when you take out all of the thinking stuff, you know, you're just left with them talking about boys. Maybe. Okay. So
I wanted it to be good. I wanted it to be good.
Why? Why did you were invested?
Well, no, I wasn't really invested. I was, you just had a little bit of hope. You know, it's Hilary Swank dealing, you know, talking about ALS. It's not something you see in movies very often, but I guess it's more of a trend.
Okay, so...
sick people in movies.
It's our one for the year, I guess. What do you have two words? Can you reduce it? or even perhaps expand it to two words? One more word than it's worth.
I'm going to go with weak vehicle.
and mine would be a desolate experience.
Harsh. Anyway. On to the news. After we went to air last week, MGM helpfully launched the next Bond film with a cast reveal, car reveal, and title reveal, which is Spectre.
Yeah, and the car is the new Aston Martin DB10.
Oh, I love Aston Martins.
Of which, apparently, I actually went to the Top Gear website to find out about this, and apparently they're only going to make 5.
Well, let's start our crowdfunding campaign, shall we?
There we go.
You can share it.
And I fully expect that most of those will be crashed as part of the making of Spectre. So, yeah. So, what
else
do we know?
Do you think they'll do proper car crashes or digital car crashes?
Oh, no, I think that that Bond has kind of an obligation to destroy really expensive stuff rather than push pixels around. I can understand why you'd go in at the end and tweak stuff, but I fully expect them to. It's interesting that, you know, they started shooting on Monday. It comes out in December. That's a really tight turnaround for a massive project, you know.
Yeah.
Like I actually think, knowing what I know about how much has gone into those Planet of the Apes movies and The Hobbit, etc., I don't think they've got time to do anything digital. They've got to shoot it real.
Yeah, this is going to be in-camera editing. It's going to be great. Just like the 30s.
And so who else have we got? Monica Bellucci is going to be in it. And Lea Seydoux from quite a lot of stuff. She's one of those French actors that just works all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great story in the paper the other day about how there's going to be a restriction on the pay rates for French movie stars.
It was a great article, wasn't it?
Yeah, French movie stars, because most of the money that funds French movies comes from the government. The French government have said, we're not just going to put money in your pocket. If you're going to work on a subsidised film, you're going to take a pay cut. And they've even supplied a scale. You know, it's very, very organised. And, you know, maybe that's another reason why Gerard Depardieu has moved to Belgium.
Well, that was the other thing that I found really interesting, because all these huge French stars, like even Marion Cotillard, and they take significantly less money to work on American films. You know, you'd think they'd make big money in the States, but no, they get the sort of cheap rates.
Well, I think that this would be an interesting little exercise to find out. Maybe we need to hack into Sony's computer system to find out how much people earn.
Maybe. But that's why Jean Reno did Godzilla, because he needed the money.
Yeah, well, I watched the first Mission Impossible film again for the first time in a long while, and of course Jean Reno turns up in that, and I don't imagine that he was paid a huge amount of money for that. I mean, once you get beyond the really, really big names that are actually box office draw cards, why would you pay people huge amounts of money, you know, like serious retire early amounts of money, you know? Not everybody's Johnny Depp, you know.
And the thing about American audience is not necessarily international audience draws. So
yeah, well, as we're discovering, or as the studios are discovering, not even the people that they thought were big audience draws are actually big audience draws, and everybody's had to take a long, hard look at themselves, you know, in terms of how much they charge. And more of the big stars are sacrificing upfront pay for a back end, you know.
Mm. Speaking of taking a long, hard look at themselves, earlier this year, Ari Folman's The Congress made full body scanning of movie stars the stuff of fantasy and science fiction. But this week, in a story on Mashable.com, it revealed that it is in fact already happening, as stars of all ages are taking digital enhancement in post-production to fix flaws and blemishes, the kind of thing that happens regularly in magazine still photos. Apparently, young actors and actresses are paying to be scanned so that there will be a digital template for any future enhancements that may be required. This was a terrifying article,
wasn't it,
to read. It was so scary that this has been going on for years.
Yep.
And actors pay their own money to get it done.
And a recent film had probably 600 examples of digital fixing of blemishes. And I'm my faith in Hollywood's ability to tell even a tiny amount of truth, it's just completely destroyed. It's like the digital makeup brush is just wrecked everything. But you sort of understand that, you know, people are going to want to fix things, and the digital allows you to fix it. So if you've got it, choice to do it. But this whole idea of recording yourself in your perfect state so that they have a reference, so you don't.
It's the Congress.
It is the Congress. It's just.
That's what it is.
Hey boy.
Hey, hey,
hey. We'll have the link to that on the show notes if you want to be as horrified as we were this week.
Yes. In a follow-up to one of last week's stories, Sundance has announced the remainder of its program for 2015, including a New Zealand-USA short film co-production called AD 1363, The End of Chivalry, directed and screenwritten by Jake Mahaffey.
Does anybody know what that's about?
Can anyone guess? We'll take your guesses.
This is another example of just pure ignorance on our part, basically. I mean, there was a time a year ago when I was editing the Screen magazine, the Screen production magazine for New Zealand on film, that I might have known a little bit more about what was in production. But now that I'm doing a different job, I'm not following the intricacies of this every day. But even then, I think that this one was probably under everybody's radar. But no doubt somebody listening will correct us and point us in the right direction for this. There were a lot of titles announced for Sundance. And of course, if you go to the Sundance website, you know, it kickstarts the year, doesn't it, Sundance? And, you know, there's Whiplash, for example, this year was a very big deal. And so a lot of what we'll be watching in 2015 is going to get launched there. What We Do in the Shadows was a midnight movie at Sundance this year. So nothing from New Zealand apart from the films that were made here, which we talked about last week. So I wonder whether that means that next year's going to see a little bit of a lull in terms of the golden age of New Zealand screen. Also in news that it was announced this week is that the Toho Company, the owners of the Godzilla franchise, who've been more recently renting it out to Hollywood for the big bucks, have decided that they're going to make another Godzilla film of their own. So there will be the 28th appearance of Godzilla on screen. There will be a genuine Japanese version. And this is in addition to Godzilla 2, which is, of course, in pre-production at the moment. So, you know, that's something else to look forward to. And, you know, I just really hope they don't do it digitally and that it's a guy in a rubber suit.
That'd be great.
Old school Godzilla.
Yes. And, of course, in big movie news out of Australia this week. What are the names?
What?
The two film reviewers, they've
right.
finished
Margaret,
their...
Margaret and whoever the other one
David?
Is. David.
David and Margaret have ended their reign of film review...
Their reign of era.
...royalty. Yes. Monday was their final show.
Yep, and we're not in Australia, for those of you listening.
For those of you who are confused, we are not
in
Australia.
Yeah, we're not in Australia. and so therefore... All of the wailing, the rending of garments, the gnashing of teeth, etc., that's been going on in Australia because these guys have, their show's come to an end. I don't really get it because in New Zealand we've never had an equivalent. You know, we're used to the fact that there's nobody's talking about movies on television, so it's like just join the club. But apparently in Australia, once a week they had a proper fairly serious movie review.
Looks like Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah, exactly. We've never had that here, and so as far as I'm concerned, why should Australia? it's not fair.
We could start one.
Well, you know...
No, that'd be terrible. I do not want to be on TV.
You don't want to be on TV?
I got to go to the gym for at least another 3 months before that happens.
We could get GoPros. Here's what we're going to do right in the new year. We're going to get GoPros and little headbands. And we're going to put one on our guest and we're going to record the show and then we'll cut it all together and you'll be able to see a Kaylee's eye view of what the show
is. It could be a Google Hangout every week.
Yeah, that's true.
That's actually something that's possible.
That is possible. And on the subject of Hangouts, not next week but the week after, which is going to be our Christmas show, the plan... It's very early stages, is to make the show a live show that you'll be able to stream on the net as we do it.
It's going to be messy.
Cool.
It's going to be messy as all get out. So a very Rancho Christmas. It's booked in for around about 6 o'clock on Tuesday the 23rd of December. So
New Zealand time.
New Zealand time, exactly. So you'll be able to... Yeah, point your browser at, probably at this point it'll be an IP address rather than a domain, but you'll be able to listen to all of the discussion. We're going to move all the microphones from the studio here to the kitchen table and gather a few guests. We've got a couple of guests, Wellington-based guests, confirmed already for that, and we're going to have the microphones around the table, and we're going to eat and drink and be merry and have a free-ranging discussion live, and we're going to hopefully get a few guests on the Skype as well. So,
Do we still have guest spots available? Can we put that out there to people?
Yeah, if you're in Wellington, if you're going to be in Wellington on Tuesday the 23rd, we still have two seats at the table available, and you know, we will feed and water you as well, and hopefully we'll get a few guests on online as well. So I actually sent the invitation out to Robert Catto, another one of our executive producers, thinking he'll be in Australia or Canada or somewhere, and it turns out he's going to be in Queenstown, which is so close. So I'm really sorry that we didn't give you enough notice to reorganize your travel schedule, but who knows, we may I know that Graham Tuckett's going to be here for it, and Dr. Mike Dickerson from Whanganui Regional Museum to talk about moas, so he'll be here with us, and possibly the great Johnny Lee as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So with any luck, I mean.
So basically, I won't be able to get in a word edgewise between you, Graham, and Johnny. But I will just be laughing through the whole show.
Yeah. So. Well, that's probably what I'll be doing as well. So anyway, a very Rancho Christmas coming up on Tuesday the 23rd, and it will be an experiment in live webcasting. What else have we got in terms of news? I thought I had one more, but I can't remember what it is now. Never mind. We'll put it on the website if it comes to us. Mm. Otherwise, well, it's time to...
go to our pre-record.
that's right. He said searching for his place on the script. Yes. So last week, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we reviewed Advanced Style, this year's great fashion documentary. This year's great documentary about New York. This year's great documentary about old people. And Ari Seth Cohen, who is the creator of the blog Advanced Style that inspired all of this stuff, I spoke to him live on the line from his New York City apartment, and we had a bit of a talk about how this all came to be.
First of all, I'd really like to ask you where the idea for the blog came from. I'm sure you've answered this question a million times, but just for the, you know, it's always interesting to hear it from your, you know, in your own words.
Sure. Well, I love talking about it because it was inspired by my grandmother, who was my best friend, and I always love talking about her. And, you know, I've always really had an affinity for older people because of her and thought of aging in a very positive way. She really encouraged me to be creative and be a very visual person. And she studied in New York at Columbia University. And she used to tell me as a little kid that if I wanted to do something creative, I should move to New York. So it was always in the back of my head. And after I graduated college, I moved home to help my mother take care of my grandmother, who had fallen ill. And when she passed away, I knew it was time to follow her advice, move to New York City, and, you know, kind of figure things out. And right away, I just started to notice all these really incredibly dressed, vital, creative older people on the street, and began to photograph and interview them. And then I started the blog from there, knowing that the people I was meeting really could hopefully change people's perspective on getting older. But in the beginning, it started out as a personal project, a way for me to connect to New York and, you know, meet all these really interesting people that were inspiring to me, you know, just seeing on the street. And then eventually I started the blog and then the book and now the film. Everything happened really organically.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Southern California in San Diego.
Wow, it couldn't be a more different environment than New York.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of style in San Diego, to tell you the truth. But my grandmothers were always very well put together, you know, always had their hair done, and always had their own unique sense of putting themselves together.
I want to talk to you about New York and whether you feel that this seems like an incredibly unique New York story. Could this have happened anywhere else, do you think?
I think that, you know, a lot of places in Europe allow for a culture of walking around and seeing interesting things. But within the U.S., there's not a lot of cities that you can really walk around and have inspiration because, you know, they're suburban. Like, I grew up in San Diego. You have to drive everywhere, so you don't see a lot of people. And you don't interact with as many people as you do in New York City. So, but I can't say that it couldn't have happened in London, or I was just in Amsterdam and I photographed a lot of people. Sydney, I had a great experience. So for me, I think it was a special connection because of my grandmother always talking to me about all the wonderful experiences she had in the 1930s living in New York City. So I think I was definitely meant to be here because of that.
Do you feel like New York, attracts the sort of characters that you have that you've discovered, or does it sort of create them, do you think?
Well, I think they, you know, people with a really strong sense of personal style, and, you know, exist in every city. So these women are everywhere, but I think New York does allow for a certain creative expression, a personal expression, because there's not a lot of judgment here. You're somewhat anonymous, And there's so much visual inspiration everywhere you look that it kind of sharpens your eye, I'd say. And, you know, people look at each other and are inspired by each other, inspired by the museums, inspired by the street culture. So I think that the women I meet have always had a certain sense of style. I can't say that it was New York that made them the way that they are, but it definitely, I think, reinforces who they are and allows them to really express themselves and get a lot of appreciation for what they do.
It's an amazing amplifier, isn't it, New York? It's like whatever you are, it seems to get turned up to 11, you know, on the dial.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, these women are in their 80s and 90s and doing more things than I'm doing. You know, we just got back from one of the women in the film, Deborah, and I just got back. We did a TED talk in Amsterdam, a TEDx talk. Mm-hmm. And we got back yesterday, and I've been home all day, and then I went out and photographed a little bit. But she went to yoga class this morning and now is heading to Brooklyn because she's a reflexologist. And she's just nonstop. And that's how these women live their lives. They're always busy. They're always inspired. They're not sitting back and letting their age, control their mindset. They're really taking control of their lives and doing what they want with their time.
Let's talk about the film a little bit, because it's just been released here in New Zealand, and we're doing our best to encourage as many people as possible to see it. It's one of the great documentaries, the most inspiring documentaries of the year. How did the film come about? Was it sort of is it just a natural progression as you flow through all media?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a natural. I met the director, Lina Pliopite, in a coffee shop right when I moved to New York City, and we both were wearing kind of mixed patterns and florals, and I said to her, I want to be your friend, the first moment I saw her. And we became friends, and I told her I'm starting this blog, and then she was an aspiring filmmaker. A month later, we saw each other at a gallery. I'd started the blog. She loved the women, and she asked if she could make small YouTube portraits of the women about their style, and I really had liked her perspective. So we started making these videos on YouTube and really kind of started concentrating on specific women that really opened up to us. And then, you know, we had like 400 hours of footage and realized we had to do something with this, especially the reaction that we were getting from the film from, you know, young women telling us that they had changed their perspective on aging and no longer feared getting older and couldn't wait to be like these women, and older women saying they no longer felt invisible. We knew that the message of these spirited ladies was powerful, and that it was something that we needed to share.
The inspiration is, I find, really intriguing, because there's so much pressure on young people to achieve, to conform, to be, God damn it, just to be happy. And it seems like these women that you've discovered and that you and that are featured in the film seem to have found the secret.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it's a constant process of development. Like Ilona, who's 94, says in the film that she really came into her own in her 80s. And that's an incredibly inspiring message, to know that, you know, she always had a wonderful life and was an artist and tried to make the most out of each experience, but that she finally found happiness in her 80s, you know. So I think it's a constant process we go through, but these women, the older that they've gotten, they felt more free to be themselves. And I think that's what I've discovered throughout doing this, is I've become more myself, more like the person that I've always wanted to be by spending time with these women.
I was going to ask you what your big sort of take home is from this experience. Is your own artistic and creative focus developing? Like what's on your agenda?
Well, it was always my dream to work with older people to travel and to do something creative. And I never, ever thought that that was that all those things would be possible at the same time. And so for me, just the fact that I can do something creative and something that I love every single day. My grandmother was a librarian and loved going to work and always told me to find something that I would love, but I never even thought that was possible. I never thought, you know, I thought I'd be doing some kind of office job. I studied art history. I didn't know really what to do. And so for me, the fact that this has happened to me has been really incredible. And definitely, you know, allowing me to feel safe in my creativity and know that I don't have to be perfect, and you know, an evolving process of trusting in my eye, and it's been really wonderful.
Ari Seth Cohen in New York City, it's been a pleasure talking to you about advanced style. Thanks very much for visiting with us here at Rancho Notorious.
Thank you, Dan.
Granddad, your mobile's turned off.
Aye, that's the way I like it. And the batteries are dead. Just to make sure. Oh, just look at that. Look at it.
Bless you.
Lovely manners.
Can we drive for a bit? Don't be stupid, Mickey. Kids can't...
Yes, you can drive. Mickey, toot the horn. Jess, you're the lookout. Stick your head out the window and shout, look out!
Look out!
Lottie, you steer.
What?
When I press this pedal in the floor that makes it go, then it's down to you.
What the?
Left a bit. Left a bit.
That's not allowed. I'm 10. I'm not insured.
I don't care. Left a bit. That's good. Left, yes. Left. That's lovely. Here we go.
I don't think that...
You need to live more and think less. More right. Well done! I've been trying to hit that for years.
What did it say?
It said, do not let children drive.
All right. What we did on our holiday, British movie, which I think has a television sort of inspiration. Is it like the film spin-off from a TV series or something like that?
I should have done more homework. According to Wikipedia, it's a spin-off.
Which we all believe.
Yes. Yes. According to Wikipedia, it's a spin-off of Outnumbered. It's by the same writers, but the character names are all different. It's just very similar in style.
Right. Because it did feel a little bit television-y, didn't it?
It looked very television-y, and yeah. I was a bit disappointed that I paid to go watch television.
Yeah. But, okay, so here we go. What we did on our holiday. Claire, you... helped us watch this one. You were watching it for us. Perhaps you could give us a little bit of a plot summary.
Okay, well, I saw it at the lovely Lighthouse Cinema on Wigan Street. Plot summary, dysfunctional family, parents who are secretly in the process of getting divorced go on a family holiday up to the beautiful highlands of Scotland to visit a husband's ill father, and chaos ensues.
Because there's an awful lot of untruth telling going on in that family, isn't there? And an awful lot of truth telling that needs to be told, because, you know, so and of course we're seeing it all through the eyes of these children who just don't get any of it, you know, like just that don't understand why you wouldn't just tell people exactly what's on your mind.
That's right, especially the oldest daughter, who keeps sort of a diary of what lies she has to go along with on behalf of her parents and what the truth is. And
So, and the I guess the most well-known... Oh, no, I mean, there are three pretty solid well-known actors, right? So Rosamund Pike plays the mother. David Tennant, still best known as Doctor Who, right? I've never seen one.
Neither have I.
No, never
He's
seen.
He's a great doctor. He's
never
great.
Seen a Tennant Doctor Who. So, so I have to say that his charms were somewhat lost upon me in this film. But playing the grandfather whose birthday it is that they're all going to celebrate, Billy Connolly.
Yeah.
Now, I a week ago I got to see the new Hobbit film, and I was, you know, 2.5 hours. No, it's not quite, 2 hours 20. And at about 2 hour point, I'm going, I'm sure Billy Connolly was supposed to be in this film. Like, and, you know, like, I've been waiting for 3 films to see Billy Connolly. And then he turns up, and it's the voice that you get, you know, when he turns up in The Hobbit, because he's playing a dwarf, which is, so he's mostly digital. Under his face is under an enormous amount of hair and beard makeup, but the voice is unmistakable. Here in this film, he is very much his own very real self. And Billy Connolly himself is struggling with Parkinson's now. He's very unwell, and he looks unwell in this film. I mean, I know he's playing a character that's also supposed to be unwell, but there's a certain... I found that it was very poignant, actually, because, you know, I've grown up watching Billy Connolly do his stand-up routines on television and his documentaries and his travel films and all those sorts of things. And he was just full of life, you know, and the voice still has it, but the body, you can see, is being very carefully...
It's a subdued Billy Connolly,
very
isn't
much
it?
So, yeah. And that I found really affecting.
Yeah, as did I. I'm a huge fan of Billy Connolly. I'll see anything that he's in.
And, yeah. And they've written some lovely lines for him. I mean, it's actually a funny script, I felt. There were lots of good... I've no idea what that was. What that noise was. Maybe that's the call to dinner. It is a funny script. The situations the setups are good. I felt like not all of the characterizations, or maybe not all of the actors, were playing the same style.
Mm.
You know, and that, so some of the performances, it was like, oh, you're just irritating me. But when you get Connolly and the kids together, you've got something really affecting. And yeah. And, you know, I was fully expecting to be really scornful of this film, and I enjoyed it a lot in the end. And I felt like there was good, you know, it's good, honest values in this film. And, you know, whereas, you know, we'd go back to the Hilary Swank film, which had an opportunity to be about something bigger than just people's selfishness, and it ended up not being about anything more than just, you know, rich people's sense of entitlement when they lose their health. And whereas this, you know, I could imagine taking kids to it and having good messaging coming through.
Mm-hmm. You could take kids to this despite what happens, which I won't say.
No, we're going to avoid this. We're going to avoid spoilers. But it comes as a surprise when it happens, and the end result is it's a terrific little piece of plotting, actually, because mm-hmm. it's like, oh yes, what are you going to do now? And you know, look, I enjoyed it a lot. Kaylee, what did you think?
I did find it very charming, and I did laugh in parts. I feel like maybe I should have done a little bit more research before I went. I didn't realize it would be sort of related. Well, it wasn't even related, really. It's just the same directors to Outnumbered, which I love. It's a hilarious show. It's really great. And it's a similar setup where the adults get a script and the kids don't. And so the kids get to improvise. And so the children are hilarious, like, especially the younger ones. So funny. And it's so realistic. I don't know. I found some of the acting a bit stifled and a bit stiff. But in the end, it was really charming, and it was really it was nice to watch.
But very television.
Very, so, you know, yeah. Like, you can tell you're watching.
It's not going to win any cinematography awards, is it?
No, and that's the thing I was wondering. It's like, why did they decide to release this in cinemas rather than do like
a Sunday night movie?
Because that's what you're watching.
Hmm.
And it does have this weird New Zealand connection, so maybe they're like, yeah, this is really going to sell it. There's this, like, New Zealand is mentioned, like, 3 times.
It's very tenuous. It's a very tenuous wee thing. I hope it does find an audience somewhere, because mm-hmm. I do think that there are people that are going to get a kick out of it, as long as your expectations aren't terribly high, and you're not expecting, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. But it does have some charms.
There's some great British actors in it as well. Like, yeah. They all give very good performances. But really, the who steals the scene are the kids. The kids are great.
Yeah.
It's worth going for them alone.
All right. So we're going to sum this up, as is our habit here, with two words. So, Claire, you're looking expectantly as if you have two words, which is way more than I ever had when I went to this.
I don't know if they're good, but definitely charming children.
Okay.
I'm going to riff on that. My two words are Highland Charmer.
Mm. Okay. And my two are Okai. And that... See, I'm allowed to be obscure, because everybody knows that I'm terrible at the two-word review.
So I'm allowed to say that because I'm from the UK.
No.
So I'm allowed to use everyone else's slang. Kind of
anyway, that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show for this week. Next week on the show, Eddie Izzard is our feature interview. He's coming to New Zealand in February with his touring show Force Majeure, so he's doing a little bit of publicity for that. We get to talk to him about the live show, about touring, and also about his screen career. So that sort of does tie us in to the show. A terrific interview with him. So that's next week. And we'll finally all get to review The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies, rather than me just talking endlessly to myself about that.
3 weeks.
Yeah. and we're also going to talk about The Offbeat Love is Strange, which was a film that was in the film festival getting a release on the 18th of December.
Oh, I'm so glad it's coming back.
You've seen it?
Oh, I loved it.
Brilliant. I haven't seen it yet. It's there's a screener sitting there waiting for me. So next week, looking forward to having a good old chat about that. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to us at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious. You'll find ways to communicate with us there via email, or you can make a comment on the website.
You could also follow us on Twitter at Rancho Podcast. That's RANCHO Podcast, all one word, where we'll be tweeting incessantly about things we think are interesting. And you can interact with us on Letterboxd too. We're getting there.
We are. We inch ever closer. So, Reese Pie, yes, I got your message about wanting to getting the login details so that you can start updating Letterboxd for us. I will get to that very soon.
Mm. And... our username on Letterboxd is Rancho Notorious, all one word.
Cool. The show is a Funerals and Snakes production. Season 2 has been executive produced by Robert Catto, Random Films, Claire Curry, Mark Cuby, Anthony S. Pratt, Fred Thompson, and Matthew Buchanan. The theme music is Ennio Morricone's The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly by Loz Plantronics. You can buy that at the iTunes store. We recommend you do. If you want to think about us every time it turns up when you on shuffle, we're going to play you out with some more music. This is from the closing credits to What We Did on Our Holiday. It's the Water Boys and a song called This Is the Sky. Special thanks to my partner Karen, who yells at us to tell us things that we didn't know.
Musical theatre trivia.
Passes the badges that we're supposed to be giving our guests through the door. So basically just gets us out of jail in any different kind of way. And also make sure that everyone who visits us here at Rancho Notorious is well fed and well watered. Thank you very much, Claire, for joining us on the show. It's been absolute pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks very much to Ari Seth Cohen for talking to us from New York City. Thanks to Kaylee. Thanks to you all for listening. That's a very good evening from me, Dan Slevin.
And good evening from me, Kaylee.